See you later.
It's a lot of people.
What's that?
A lot of people.
Yeah.
I'm on the right. Not getting the Court of Appeals as much as this Commissioner of Public Safety. So a lot fewer people are interested in our case, apparently.
All right, the next matter on the calendar is Berkland versus Commissioner of Public Safety. It looks like both of counsel are here and ready to proceed. Just by way of, well, first of all, I'm John Rodenberg. I'm presiding with me are Judges Larkin and Sleater. You'll each have 15 minutes for your principal argument. Appellant will have 5 minutes for rebuttal if the appellant wishes to use that time. When you begin your comments, give us your name and the party you represent so that if we go back to the recording later, we have that information. The podium is adjusted to suit your comfort, and whenever appellant's counsel is ready, you may proceed.
Oh. Your ring's not as good as it used to be, Your Honor.
Neither is mine, I will say.
Well, one good thing is I've never been told to speak up ever in court, so I got one of those booming voices that carries.
Fortunately, for those of us who wear hearing aids, there is also a system now that goes right from there into my hearing aid.
I haven't gotten to that point yet, despite having electric guitars playing the radio too loud and shooting shotguns, and I'm amazed I haven't gotten there yet.
All right.
I noticed something. You know, as you have a case for a while, you write your brief and you think about it, and by the time you get to the oral argument, when I originally thought, I thought I had nothing really to say to add to what my brief was. But I've become convinced that the eastbound lanes, by the way, Paul Ahern on behalf of Mr. Berkland, the appellant here, that on behalf of him, I've become convinced that if you look at 169.19, the appropriate paren under there would be paren C. Christmas Lake Road is a two-way road, and he turned onto the one-way between the median and the shoulder of eastbound Highway 7. Now, counsel, me, may have been sidetracked by the fact that when he asked the officer at the hearing whether there was a one-way sign, she said she didn't know, and then promptly readjusted to paragraph B, but I think the findings are pretty clear, and also if you look at the Google Maps that Judge Moreno took under advisement.
Mr. Ahern, can I just clarify that? Would not C suggest literally a one-way road, so there is no westbound, but 7 has both an eastbound and a westbound, and hence is that not why B is the appropriate?
And I did analyze both in my brief. The conclusion is neither one requires a person to be at the area closest to the median or center line.
Is the main distinction, just to clarify, and I saw the reference to it, if we're doing statutory analysis, C, the language specifically highlights nearest the center line, whereas B does not.
Yes, but if you look at that, that would be the point where it enters the intersection, not the point where it enters the roadway, which is also in B, so as to enter the intersection nearest the center line, which also is in B. Half of the roadway nearest the center line when you enter the intersection. But after entering the intersection, C has no restriction at all as to where you end out on that roadway. Do the approach in the area closest to the center line, which would be the left turn lane where Mr. Berkland was, and then you enter the intersection right after that in the area closest to the center line, which I don't believe there is one anyways, which I guess you'd
there
say
isn't,
this.
I don't think there is.
I don't believe there is either.
When you're in, I don't know if this is really a one-way or a two-way, but what it really is a divided roadway. And once you're on the right-hand side of the divider, there isn't a center line.
No, once you enter eastbound 7.
7, right.
In fact, if you want to interpret that, I don't think it is. I think in the intersection, you have to be on the right side. I think I made some comment that if you wanted to interpret that eastbound 7 is the part you're supposed to be to the right of the center line, the only center line would be the one dividing the left and right lane. My guy would be on the right lane, but I don't think that's probably what they meant. Clearly, I think C, it's clearly only one way between that median and that separates east and westbound, and certainly B applies to roads separated by center lines. I think C is what applies. Doesn't really matter much because there's no prohibition. The court got it right here in the Kelly case. There's no prohibition which requires prohibiting someone from entering the right lane rather than the left lane after a left turn.
Mr. Ahern, can I have you shift to 169.18 because that's an additional statutory violation that the trial judge made reference to, and in particular the judge's order finding of fact number 7. And if you don't have it in front, I'll just read it for you. Officer Grotman also testified that petitioner's vehicle may have hit the center of the intersection as it turned directly into the outermost right-hand lane, and then parentheses eastbound of Highway 7. Can you tell me, can you describe, draw me a picture, what do you believe the judge was specific, where in this intersection and what center line was the judge referring to?
I am confused by this anyways, what he meant. I don't think maybe is a finding of fact. I think you can certainly pull someone over on reasonable suspicion based on facts. You know, I saw A, B, and C and therefore suspected something. But here it's just an officer who wasn't really sure whether or not the person had touched it or not. I think whether or not the person touched
it. Where's the it? That's what I'm getting at. Touched
what?
What
is it?
Yeah. Well, that's what I want. Can you tell me from the testimony, you were at the trial attorney as well?
Yes.
You heard the officer? What was she referring to? Where in this intersection?
It may have hit the center of the intersection. Well, the center of the intersection would be, first you're in the approach, the left turn lane. The intersection is, as I said in my brief, that square box. So you would have touched the center of it, but that's sort of what someone does when they take a left turn anyways.
So you understood that to mean the center line being the north-south line in the middle of that intersection?
That would be the, what, you know.
Was there a line?
There is no line if you look at the Google map. There is a center, but you're going to go across the center anyways. I think the court was referencing, I believe there's another reference to it, to give some fairness to the trial court, even though it may not help me here, may have crossed the center line. This is on page 8 of this analysis. That petitioner may have crossed over the center line as he made the turn directly into the outermost right-hand lane. I think the judge meant may have touched the line as he turned, as Mr. Berkland turned directly into the right lane, which just seemed to contradict each other, whether someone goes directly into it and whether someone touches it. I would state it's one of two things, Your Honor. If that's what he meant, Judge Moreno, and I think it's probably the most likely if you read page 8 there, it's either not a fact, because, you know, I may have found a parking space a lot easier if I hadn't gone around and around for 40 minutes this morning, but that's not a fact. It's a maybe. I may have some point there not made a complete stop. I don't know if I did or didn't. I made lots of stops, and maybe I didn't stop completely at one, and maybe I did, but it's not a fact. It's it's something the officer is unsure of and should not and cannot be the basis for a stop. You have to base a stop on articulable facts and reasonable inferences from those facts, not something that may or may not have happened. And she didn't offer facts. She didn't say, I saw him in the area to the left of the center line, looked down at my computer terminal, looked up and saw him on the right side, and therefore he may, I suspect, reasonably suspected he touched the center line. That's not what she did here. She just wasn't sure of it.
And presuming the record suggests that she did, and that's the basis the court would find an alternative, do you believe that is a violation of the 16918 subdivision 7 parentheses 1?
No, I don't.
And why not?
I think it's minutia. I don't think if you're touching a center line as you turn, that's something you have to signal a turn for. I think that's a standard everyday left turn onto a highway, which is what Mr. Berkeland did here. We're at an intersection here coming from Maynard's where my client has to make a complete stop, has to have his turn signal on. Upon making that turn onto Christmas Lake Road, he has to immediately turn a left turn signal on, get in the left lane, have it on throughout the turn. There are a lot of ways to pull someone over, and I can tell you, practicing in that geographical area, there are a lot of people pulled over for various violations at this particular intersection where you have lots of driving decisions to make. But you can't pull someone over for, one, the real reason she pulled him over, a mistake of law, and that's the George case and the Anderson Foss Law move a lane over case. And you can't base it on something that's not a fact. He may have touched the center line.
The sentence in question looks like it's on page 6 of the transcript. And I don't see that's actually the words that the officer used. Looks like the officer says it had appeared that it turned directly into the far right lane and it touched the center line, partially being in the left lane, but the majority of the vehicle, the entirety of the time, was in the right lane. The word may isn't in there from the actual testimony of the officer.
But then she's but those are contradictory statements. Whether she goes, my client went directly into the lane or touched the line, which would not be direct. And then the next question is from Mr. Mern was, you said it moved immediately into the right lane. Did it start out in the left lane of Highway 7? Her answer is no.
No, because she had said he went, she says he it turned directly into the far right lane and it touched the center line, being partially in the left lane. Looking at the Google Maps, and I suppose we shouldn't really rely on Google Maps except they're in the record. I can't really tell on that if there's it looks like it's a dash line, but I can't tell for sure. And do we know where the dashes start in relation to the intersection itself?
I don't know, and who knows when that was taken and whether or not they've repainted it. And
were there any pictures or testimony about where the dashes start?
I know there were not. And later on she testifies as well in a much more vague way about this. Yeah. Okay. And I did a good job of highlighting it, but I'll tell you, I know she answers a question where the word may is in there someplace regarding this alleged.
I'll read it again. We don't need to get too hung up on that. Why is it that Mr. Schmidt taught me, and probably everyone else went to driver's training and was told, that you should turn into that leftmost lane after you complete a turn like this?
Because the person who wrote the driving manual, this is not in the record, by the way, but I did check it. Whoever wrote the driving manual put it in there.
Mr. Schmidt read that.
Is that who Mr. Schmidt?
He was,
I went to AAA. He was one of my coaches in high school and also my driving trainer and training instructor.
And he read the manual first.
I went to AAA and was disappointed they only showed death on the highways, not Signal 30, which I heard was a lot more violent and teenage boys would be much more entertained by. But
it does seem like if we were writing the rule, and I was on the panel in Kelly, but if we were writing the rule, it seems like there's every good reason, because there would be at an intersection like this opposing traffic, that the ones turning right should stay in the rightmost lane and the ones turning left should stay in the leftmost lane so as not to crash into one another.
Except you're going to have a good view of that. I think the reason that they make it, you know, I've been trying to think this through, either why they do all this, which I don't think really probably matters in the end, or whether it's in the driving manual. It's there.
Well, but they say all kinds of things in manuals that aren't the law, too.
Oh, yeah. And it isn't in this case. And to the trial court, I put in a whole slew of trial court orders which have held that there's no requirement to turn into the right lane when you take a left turn. Under paragraph B, and here I go switch and think paragraph C is the more appropriate one.
Mr. Hanger, could I... The judge in the footnote referenced the U.S. Supreme Court case in Hain, the mistake of law, which ultimately determined, contrary to our Anderson-George case, that a reasonable mistake of law could still be a basis for a stop. How do you reconcile that decision, which is subsequent to the Anderson-George cases?
I think the law in Minnesota should still be, we also have certainly state constitution that we could go under. Be honest with you, I didn't read the case in the Supreme Court. I should probably be more scholarly. I'll take your word for it. How's that for an admission?
You're talking about Hine now?
Hine, correct.
Yeah. That's the one where the North Carolina officer thinks that you need different lighting than the statute actually requires.
Yeah, which this one, I mean, what I was thinking is if this was going to become an issue, The one I would bring up would be a speed limit on a particular road is 35 for 20 years, and then one day the city council and everybody puts up a 50-mile-an-hour one, and poor Joe Schmo is driving down the road at 48 and gets pulled over. I don't think you can say that's a reason. I think the speed limit is the speed limit. The law is the law, and Joe Schmo should not be pulled over for going 48 and a 50.
And look at that. You didn't think you were going to need any time, and you not only used it all, we went over.
I had all kinds of great stuff since I grew up in the area to say about the Excelsior Amusement Park and Dance Land burning down.
That'll have to wait for another
day. But I used it up, Your Honor. Thank you.
Respondent, whenever you're ready.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Brian Murn. I'm with the Attorney General's Office on behalf of the Commissioner of Public Safety. I wanted to go through a couple of the questions that you had to start off. First of all, the divided roadway. Judge Sleater, you had mentioned, isn't it an east and westbound road? That would be correct. I would argue that it's under paragraph B because it is a roadway. There's no facts in the record that this is a one-way roadway. We simply have a Google map that was attached. The officer didn't know whether or not it was one-way or if there were any signs there.
And well, then, US 7 is not a one-way roadway.
No, it is not.
US 7 is a two-way roadway that has two lanes going each way.
I just wanted to clarify that so that we weren't under paragraph C.
Right, I'm agreeing with you.
Okay.
I don't think there's anything in the record suggesting that we're in the one-way roadway world.
No, and I was going to say it's similar to Kelly. When you look at the Google Maps, it has a similar setup. There's right. Just a median in the Kelly case.
But the roadway is US 7.
Yes, right. The one that's turned on. So, and the court as well found in paragraph 4 on A2 that it was Highway 7 is a four-lane road, so it's all the same. The second question had to deal, or another question had to deal with the violation. And I think if you look at 169.187A, that is the lane line violation, which Judge Rodenberg had mentioned that the transcript is clear that the petitioner had driven on the lane line that separates the two. And what I want to be clear about that is with the Cruz case from this court in 2018, if you hit one of the lane lines, that can be a basis for the stop.
Oh. Did I write that?
I don't recall. I apologize.
Was that the fog line or a lane line, and was it identified how long?
Specifically, they referred to a center line in that, but they also mentioned fog lines.
But the point being there was a line of travel, correct?
Yeah, it would be the center line in the center or the fog line, which I would argue that the center lane line that we're talking about that's separating the two lanes on eastbound Highway 7 would constitute that.
Is it just to clarify, though, the officer, the reason for the stop as articulated at the stop, just to get to this point, was not touching a center line but for going in the far outermost lane instead of the innermost lane?
I believe that was what was told to him when she was asked during redirect. I had asked her if it was a statutory violation under the left-hand turn as well as the lane line, and I think her first response referred to the left-hand turn, which the left-hand turn is what happened when they hit the center line as well, so they could both be. And as this court knows...
To say another way, though, the evidence suggests he was never traveling in any lane until he got into the outermost lane, and by doing so touched the center, which there may or may not be a line, of the two, the divider between the eastbound 7 two lanes?
Well, Your Honor, I would argue that the petitioner probably straddled the lanes as they went through, because there's testimony. You look at A3 paragraph 7 of the court's order. You've got the court's order that indicates the finding that Officer Grotman also testified that petitioner's vehicle may have hit the center of the intersection.
And where is that located?
That's paragraph 7.
No. I see that in the order. That's a question I asked Mr. Ahern, too. Where is the center of the intersection?
The center of the intersection is the actual intersection where the roadways meet. You've got the center, that square that's created in the middle, as Mr. Ahern indicated. So it's the center of the roadway. And the testimony, there's two different things that the court determined. They determined the center of the roadway, which is that paragraph 7, that he would have driven through the center of the roadway. He was supposed to be to the left under that last sentence. So he violated the left-hand turn statute based on that.
Can I just clarify, under that last sentence, no matter which lane you turn in, you will have to end up left of the center lane, correct? In other words, if you go outer, you're going to go left of the center lane. There's no real line there, but the left of the center. Or if you go innermost, you will be left of the center.
If you go innermost, Your Honor, you would be left of the center, which is what I believe the testimony.
What I'm trying to understand is I'm trying to understand that, too, where this is. If you go the outer lane, you will also end up left of the center.
Your Honor, I don't believe that's correct. I believe the testimony is that if you went in the what we're focused on with the center of the intersection is the actual travel through the intersection, which hasn't been dealt with by the Kelly case.
Your argument is that the center, the word center in the last sentence,
yes,
is a point, not a line.
Yes, Your Honor. And we have two violations, that paragraph 7 deals with the center of the intersection, because the officer had testified that he had driven through the center. Let me clarify.
So can I just clarify, so that you're reading into that, so you must be short of the point center to turn left?
The last sentence says that as they pass, our argument is that as he passes through the intersection, he has to be left of the center of the intersection.
Of the point that is the center.
Yes, and that has not been dealt with Kelly. Kelly was when you exited into the lane on Highway 7 here, it would be when
so how
exited.
Would that prohibit one from going to the, reading this first sentence and that together, prohibit you from going to the outermost lane?
If you made a sharp turn or you jerked over into the right lane, you still would.
So if I straddled the point on my way to the outermost lane, would that be inconsistent with the statute?
If you stayed left of the center of the intersection and then you turned into the outermost lane, you still would be within the Kelly decision as well as the statute. But that's not what happened here, what the testimony was.
Counsel, at the hearing, what was the testimony, if any, regarding other traffic in the area?
There was no other traffic obstructing.
So there was no traffic preventing a turn into the closest lane, I'll just say.
Yes, Your Honor.
But then that means there was also no traffic that was endangered by the turn into the farther lane.
That would be correct.
And is it fair to say it's about as clear as mud how you violate this statute?
I think if you read Battle and Kelly, there's some issues that have still not been determined. Essentially, the passing through the intersection, which is that center line.
Here's my concern. Just it is a concern, and you can address it, because here's my thinking. At the end of the day, whether or not the police may stop somebody for investigatory purposes is based on a determination of reasonableness. If there is a violation of a traffic law, it's reasonable to stop. I'm listening to all this thinking, how would anyone know if there's been a violation of a traffic law? And I'm not feeling that it's also easy to point to a law that was violated and say, well, this is a traffic violation that justifies the stop. It's like, here's some driving conduct that might violate a statute. We're not entirely clear. And we add to that, there's no other traffic in the area, no allegation that this maneuver somehow endangered people or property. And I kind of find myself asking, you know, was this reasonable to stop under these circumstances?
Your Honor, I think you're talking specifically about the left-hand turn, which we have two statutory violations here. The left-hand turn, my argument is still that the center of the intersection, and on transcript page 12, that they, as well as the third page of the order, paragraph 7, mm-hmm. shows the center of the intersection. And I'll leave it to Your Honor if the statute is not that clear, particularly with the Kelly and Battle decision dealing with either passing through versus the Kelly decision, which is exiting. But here we have a clear lane line violation.
And what is the lane line violation?
The lane line violation is specifically...
Not what the judge said, but you explain it to me, because I'm not understanding it. Is the judge saying that once, after the turn, left turn was completed, the vehicle then touched a lane line after completing the turn?
The testimony is after the turn, after you're coming through the intersection.
Right.
Here's Officer Grotman's testimony about referring to plaintiff's vehicle. It had appeared that it turned, meaning the appellant's vehicle, turned directly into the far right lane, and it touched the center line, partially being in the left lane, but the majority of the vehicle, the entirety, was in the right lane. So as you're turning into Highway 7, he clips the lane line, which is similar to a lot of these other cases where you clip the lane line in under 169.187A, and even the Cruz case, driving on the lane line is sufficient. You don't
have to go over.
Isn't
there some language, because I think I might have written the Cruz opinion, and I didn't read it before today, but I thought there was some language in the statute that we were dealing with in the case I wrote about, you know, whether the issue in the case I'm thinking of is whether you need to completely cross a center lane or a fog line, or if just touching a center lane or a fog line is enough for a violation. But then I thought within that statute there was also language about creating, you know, circumstances that are dangerous or when it's not reasonably possible to do so. There are some qualifiers as well.
Within the statute, there's a qualifier about the safety.
Oh, and what is that language? That's what I'm looking for.
In 169.18, you can't move lanes unless the move can be made with safety.
Okay, so then that's my question here. Let's say he turns into the farther, the right lane.
Yes, Your Honor.
And let's say he clips the line between the left and the right lane. And let's say that didn't endanger anybody because there was no other traffic. Wouldn't it be the case that it was safe for him to touch the lane line for a moment as he made the turn?
Your Honor,
seems to me we're splitting a lot of hairs to get to a reasonable basis for a stop here, quite frankly. In the absence of speeding, I followed the vehicle swerved, I saw the person come out of a bar. I mean, there's not much here.
Your Honor, all I can say is that the statute requires that you stay within your lane, and the Cruz decision counted when you drove on a lane line. And it's undisputed testimony. We also have a trial court here where the appellant's counsel asked the officer to draw a demonstrative exhibit, and the trial counsel was in the best position to watch that testimony as well as her drawing it. You have an issue here where you did hit the lane line. That provides an independent basis as well as the center of the intersection, which is not covered by Kelly.
And the center of the intersection, meaning where you need to be in the intersection when you're executing the turn?
When you're executing as you're going through the turn. And that, both of those are clear statutory violations, which I would argue would provide reasonable articulable suspicion, which is relatively low.
To the subject of, I don't want to spend all of our time on Cruz, but Judge Larkin did author Cruz.
Okay.
The facts, it's published opinion. Facts are that the vehicle is driving down a lane of traffic and then moves onto a line and then moves back without ever crossing over. That seems like a different situation than what we're dealing with here. In other words, the officer here says very explicitly, it appeared that it turned directly into the far right lane and it touched the center line, partially being in the left lane. In order to execute that turn, you probably would just momentarily cross that line. Otherwise, you can't get over to the right lane.
Well, that was the factual determination that the court made, that you would have necessarily hit, crossed that line, which provides the factual basis for crossing the line.
But Cruz doesn't say you can never touch a line. Cruz says that if you're driving down a lane and then you weave onto a line that divides that lane from something else, either a fog line or the center line, that's enough.
Yeah, and I understand that they were traveling straightforward, but the case still identifies you've got a lane line violation. And we've got two violations here where the officer testified. She also provided basis that due to the time of the night, the day of the week, she has other things, and she testified as a wide turn like that, she believed that was indicative of impaired driving. So the fact that the trial court makes a factual finding that that's sufficient reasonable articulable suspicion, crossing the lane line as well as crossing the center of the intersection, it provides two bases for that reasonable articulable suspicion.
And Mr. Murn, can I just clarify something too? You mentioned you use the phrase conflict between Battle and Kelly case, although the Kelly case seemed to made the point that they were not asked that question in the first one. But would it be safe to say that the respondent's position would be contrary to Kelly in any case, even though that's unpublished, because Kelly simply says that statute, which would include both sentences, does not mandate turning into the innermost lane?
I think the judge's order in his memorandum after page 6 may be contrary to Kelly, but I don't think we have to get there. Up through page 6, we've already got the violation of driving through the center of the intersection for the left-hand turn, and then the end of the memorandum, which he incorporates the entire memorandum as the order, would be. But I do not believe that it's inconsistent with Kelly. I mean, we have a situation with Kelly. Unlike Kelly, they're straddling the here we've got straddling that lane as we come through and hitting the lane line as well as hitting the center of the lane. I see my time is up.
Thank you. Mr. Ahern, any rebuttal?
A few things on rebuttal. First, the word straddling's never used in any of the testimony. As far as going back to...
Touched is the word that was used.
What?
Touched.
Word that was used. And finding number 4 on page 2 of Judge Moreno's order does state in its last phrase, the last sentence, Highway 7 is a four-lane road with a median dividing the lanes of traffic traveling east and west. As I said earlier, I don't know if it really and in my brief, it really matters whether or not parent B or parent C applies. Neither requires someone to be closest to the curb or the median. And
we
know
that. Let me ask a question here. It's seldom that I have an original thought, so when I do have one, I want to share it with others. Maybe there's a reason why Mr. Schmidt instructed me to turn into the lane that's closest to the center when executing a left-hand turn, not because you have to turn into that lane under the last sentence, but if you execute your left-hand turn in conformity with the last sentence, you're turning to the left of the point in the center of the intersection, to the left. You're traveling to the left of that point. Then you would almost have to straighten out a little bit in order to get to the right lane without crossing a line, as the state is arguing. So consequently, the way to comply, it might be the case that the way to comply with both sentences is you, of necessity, turn into the leftmost lane because you've passed to the left of the center point, and the lane that is then directly in front of you is the left one.
I don't think so, Your Honor, and also he can't legislate what the law is anyways, Schmidt. My instructor told me to aim
at... You didn't know Mr. Schmidt, did you?
I took a AAA, so I don't know if I had Mr. Schmidt. I know they told me aim high in steering, leave yourself an out, look out for the other guy, and get the big picture, but none of those appear in our statutes. I can't believe I remember that from being age 15. I won't even say how many years ago. However, another thing I spotted was there's no evidence finding has at least a finding that there is a median. I'd ask the court to look at page 11 of the transcript, my cross-examination, probably not as brilliant as it should be, but enough. So when Mr. Berkland left the area of Christmas Lake Road, he was as far to the left as he could be, closest to the center line of Christmas Lake Road, correct? She answered, correct. He was in the left-hand turning lane, exactly where he should have been, correct? Correct. Now as he entered the intersection, he was in that same position, just to the right of the center area, is that correct? Yeah, to the right of the center area, and she responded, because I think this came up earlier, there's no line in the middle of the intersection.
That much we agree.
Okay, but a reasonable guess, she said, yeah. Then he took the left turn into the right lane of Highway 7, is that correct? Yes. Which you believed as a matter of law was illegal in your mind, correct? Yes. You can take a seat. Thanks. Was there any other reason that you stopped Mr. Berkland? No. This touching thing, you know, maybe we should, I don't do a lot of business law, but I read about poison pills. Sometimes to try and, I think trial courts think they put in, I found the witness credible. The counsel for the appellant goes, oh, I just can't appeal that because that's in the province of the trial court. But he found her credible in a statement about maybe it happened, and that's not a fact. There was no violation. It could be that he has to be on the right side in the intersections, what the statute says, which there is no right of the center line because there's no center line in the middle of that intersection, so that would not be applicable. And I think it's confusing whether or not they meant as he entered Highway 7. And I would say even touching the center line is such minutia, even if you wanted to go from maybe to certainly, it's just not enough. I am up. My time's gone, too.
All right.
I violated my promise to be short.
The matter is submitted. It's an interesting issue, and we thank counsel for your briefing and argument. We'll issue our decision within 90
minutes. Thank you so much.